Teacher Training for Students with Neurodiversity, a guide to specific learning difficulties. This guide will cover introduction, notes on neurodiversity, dyslexia, dyspraxia, developmental coordination disorder, developmental verbal dyspraxia, dysgraphia, specific language impairment, dyscalculia, autism spectrum disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, anxiety, and mental health. Introduction. I've come to a frightening conclusion that I am the decisive element in the classroom. It's my personal approach that creates the climate. It's my daily mood that makes the weather. As a teacher, I possess a tremendous power to make a child's life miserable or joyous. I can be a tool of torture or an instrument of inspiration. I can humiliate or heal. In all situations, it's my response that decides whether a crisis will be escalated or de-escalated, and a child humanized or dehumanized. Quote from Ginnott, 1993. Specific learning difficulties is an overarching term for a number of associated learning differences. They affect the way information is learned and processed and can affect literacy, memory, coordination, and the manipulation of letters and numbers. These differences can appear across all age ranges of ability and with varying degrees of severity or significance. They are often hidden. Many pupils with specific learning difficulties will look and behave just like their peers and may even demonstrate no immediate learning differences. Then a pupil may have more than one co-occurring difference. Specific learning difficulties are lifelong conditions that can have a significant impact on a person's life. This podcast and booklet contain a brief overview of the most commonly occurring specific learning difficulties. It should be kept in mind that this list is by no means exhaustive and is designed to provide a brief overview only. Further information, training, and development are necessary to adequately support individuals with specific learning difficulties and to assist them in achieving their potential. The profile of individuals with SPLD is affected by a range of factors, including the cluster of learning differences they experience, their ability, background, and opportunities. Therefore, an individual should be supported in a way that not only meets the needs of their particular weaknesses, but also develops their strengths and abilities. Focusing on a label is misleading and can be counterproductive. Focusing on the specific needs, talents, desires, and aspirations of the individual is likely to lead to far greater success. Notes on neurodiversity. For too long, we've assumed that there is a single template for human nature, which is why we diagnose most deviations and disorders. But the reality is that there are many different kinds of minds. That is a very good thing. Quote from Jonah Lehrer. Neurodiversity is a relatively new term, thought to have been coined in the 1990s by Judy Singer, an Australian autism activist. It was originally used by the autistic community, who were keen to move away from the medical model and dispel the belief that autism is something to be treated and cured rather than an important and valuable part of human diversity. The idea of neurodiversity has now been embraced by many other groups who are using the term as a means of empowerment to promote the positive qualities possessed by those with a neurological difference. It encourages people to view neurological differences such as autism, dyslexia, dysgraphia as natural and normal variations of the human genome. Further, it encourages them to reject the culturally entrenched negativity which has typically surrounded those that live, learn, and view the world differently. To find out more about the concept of neurodiversity, readers are recommended to read Neurotribes, The Legacy of Autism and the Future of Neurodiversity by Steve Silberman, 2015. Dyslexia. The trouble was that the teacher gave me too many instructions. By the time I got to where I needed to be, I'd forgotten all but the last one, and that didn't make any sense on its own. So I hid. Emma, age 11. What is dyslexia? The British Dyslexia Association and Get Into Neurodiversity have adopted the definition of dyslexia published in 2009 from Sir Jim Rose's report on identifying and teaching children and young people with dyslexia and literacy difficulties. It is recommended that this definition is used with the additional paragraph from the BDA as shown below. Dyslexia is a learning difficulty that primarily affects the skills involved in accurate and fluent word reading and spelling. Characteristic features of dyslexia are difficulties with phonological awareness, verbal memory, and verbal processing speed. Dyslexia occurs across the age range and across the range of intellectual abilities. It is best thought of as a continuum, not a distinct category, and there are no clear cut-off points. Co-occurring difficulties may be seen in aspects of language, motor coordination, mental calculation, concentration, personal organization, but these are not by themselves markers of dyslexia. A good indication of the severity and persistence of dyslexic difficulties can be gained by examining how the individual responds or has responded to well-founded intervention. In addition to these characteristics, the BDA and Get Into Neurodiversity Australia acknowledges the visual and auditory processing difficulties that some individuals with dyslexia can experience. It points out that dyslexic readers can show a combination of abilities and difficulties that affect the learning process. Now, what does this mean? Not all dyslexic children are affected in the same way. Some may have mild problems, whilst others will have more profound difficulties across more than one area. Difficulties can be exacerbated depending on the task and the external factors. A dyslexic learner's performance is often variable. They can have good days and bad days. Their difficulties can include phonological, visual, and memory difficulties. Phonological difficulties. Dyslexic children with phonological difficulties can lack the automaticity with letter-sound correspondence, which is needed for decoding and pronouncing words for reading, and encoding for spelling. Memory difficulties. Dyslexic individuals often have difficulty holding information in their short-term memory and also with retrieving it from their working memory. Visual difficulties. Dyslexic individuals can often have difficulty with tracking accurately. They may experience glare and fatigue from reading on black and white, or difficulty reading certain fonts. What to look for? In general, a learner who has a cluster of the following may be dyslexic. Difficulty with learning to read and or write despite intervention. Slow speed of processing spoken and or written language. Poor word retrieval. Poor concentration may be easily distracted. Difficulty learning, example, days of the week and months of the year. Difficulty telling the time and with aspects of time such as yesterday and tomorrow. Poor timekeeping. Poor personal organization. May have left-right confusion. Employs in avoidance tactics such as sharpening a pencil or looking for books, and may even act as the class clown. Let's look at written work. A poor standard compared with oral ability, poor pencil grip, poor handwriting with reversals and badly formed letters, poor presentation and disregard of the margin, messy appearance with many crossings out and spellings attempted several times, persistent reversal confusion, example, BD, PG, PQ, NU, MW. Transposed letters, triad for tired, produces phonetic and bizarre spellings which may not be age appropriate. Unusual letter sequencing. Let's look at reading. There'll be slow progress with reading, difficulty with blending letters together, difficulty with syllable division and identifying beginning, middle, and end sounds, difficulty with pronouncing unfamiliar words, difficulty with expression, lack of automaticity, especially when reading aloud, unable to recognize familiar words, omits words or adds or substitutes words,
loses the point in stories. Difficulty identifying the main points or the main idea. Difficulty with comprehension. Let's look at their strengths. Dyslexic learners may show strengths in the following areas: creativity, the ability to visualize things, practical and problem-solving skills, lateral thinking skills. Being able to see the big picture, so global thinkers, in terms of strategies and problem-solving. Good visual-spatial awareness. Good verbal communication skills. And high levels of motivation and persistence. Routes to identification. Well, you can have a checklist, simple checklist of questions that give indicators of dyslexia, as you have in your course. Screening tests, commercially available tests, paper-based or online, that can be administered by a non-specialist, although the tester should be trained and confident to interpret the results appropriately. A qualified specialist to offer diagnostic assessments. The assessor should be an educational, behavioral, developmental, or neuropsychologist with experience in diagnosing learning difficulties and dyslexia. A battery of tests is conducted to assess the intellectual capacity, cognitive development, and levels of literacy attainment. Profile of strengths and weaknesses is vital and should be produced in a report along with recommendations. The psychologist should be registered with their national organization and be able to select appropriate tests, including closed tests only available to psychologists, to diagnose any underlying difficulties and produce that report with conclusions and recommendations. Prevalence. Around 1 in 10 of the population are thought to be dyslexic. Dyspraxia. Developmental Coordination Disorder. DCD. When you are perching on a high stool with no back or arms, you may be so busy trying to keep your balance that you just can't listen to the teacher. Victoria Biggs. From Caged in Chaos. What is dyspraxia? Well, otherwise known as Developmental Coordination Disorder, DCD, is a common disorder affecting fine and or gross motor skills coordination in both children and adults. The Dyslexia Foundation adds to this, recognizing the many non-motor difficulties that may also be experienced by people with the condition and which have a significant impact on daily life activities. These include memory, perception, processing, as well as additional problems with planning, organizing, and carrying out movements in the right order in everyday situations. Dyspraxia can also affect articulation and speech. It is a lifelong condition. What does it mean? Well, dyspraxia, DCD, can affect almost every part of an individual's life and make living and learning more challenging. Many of the skills other people take for granted or seem to just do have to be taught, learned, and practiced. They do not come naturally. These can be difficult to understand, and dyspraxic learners are often frustrated if the issues they're experiencing are not recognized and responded to appropriately. Dyspraxic individuals find it difficult to copy movements demonstrated by someone else. They may appear inefficient or awkward in the way they carry out activities tasks. They have an inconsistent learning performance and weak perceptio-motor skills. They benefit from support and encouragement in class and other environments, which allow them to feel more comfortable and more likely to engage, whilst keeping their self-esteem afloat. Dyspraxia, or DCD, affects each individual differently, ranging from mild to severe. Many learners fall somewhere between the two extremes and are dependent on appropriate support in all environments to reach their potential. Teachers should respond to the predominant need that the learner is exhibiting at any time, and these may change with subject area and learner's age. Responding to need is always more preferable to responding to diagnosis. Learners will present a cluster of differences as seen as a combined checklist. Most commonly, these will include delays in reaching their milestones, example, some never crawl, challenges with handwriting, poor posture, hypermobility, poor ball skills, throwing and kicking, challenges using equipment, utensils, scissors, rulers, cutlery, challenges dressing and undressing, challenges with or awkward running, skipping, jumping, and poor stamina, difficulty remembering instructions, challenges with personal organization, problems with learning to ride a bike. I require more time to process and act upon information. The structure of secondary and further education may prove too difficult for the learner, and their struggles may become more evident as a result. If needs are not met, they may become disaffected and exhibit challenging behavior. So what do we need to look for? Challenges with physical activities such as physical education, especially activities which involve eye-hand and eye-foot coordination, example, ball skills, running, hopping, jumping, climbing, skipping, learning to ride a bike, using equipment, and working as a team. Poor posture, body awareness, and awkward, effortful movements, hypermobility. Poor short-term visual and verbal memory, copying from the board, or dictation, or following instructions. I have handwriting challenges, both with style and speed. Frequently, children have an awkward pencil grip. Challenges organizing themselves and their equipment. Difficulty with activities which involve well-developed sequencing ability. Problems with awareness of time. Pupils need constant reminders. Sensory issues, such as light, sound, or heat sensitivity. It takes them longer to process information. They may have extremes of emotions. Lack of awareness of potential dangers, particularly relevant to practical and science subjects. Problems with forming friendships, later in primary and in secondary school. Immature behavior. Poor personal hygiene or self-awareness. Their strengths. They're tenacious, creative, empathetic, kind, polite, keen to please, sensitive, often good at drama, singing, creative activities. What's the prevalence? At least 5% of the population in varying degrees. It's probable that there is at least one child with dyspraxia, DCD, in every classroom who will require access to a specific treatment program. Dyspraxia DCD can present as a unique condition but often coexists with other specific learning difficulties. Routes to identification. A medical diagnosis via a GP with referral to a pediatrician, an occupational therapist and or physiotherapist. A cognitive assessment by an educational psychologist or specialist teacher may highlight working memory and speed of processing weaknesses too. There's further information there for ongoing support.
Developmental Verbal Dyspraxia, DVD. It's no good just explaining something. I have to feel the words. Joe, a young man with verbal dyspraxia. So what is it? Developmental Verbal Dyspraxia, DVD, is a rare condition which refers to the difficulties in making and coordinating the precise articulatory movements required in the production of clear speech. Children with DVD find it challenging to make speech sounds correctly and join sounds together in words and sentences. Oral dyspraxia, on the other hand, refers to the challenges in coordinating the movements of the vocal tract, the larynx, the lips, the tongue, the palate, when not producing speech. Children with oral dyspraxia have challenges carrying out oral motor tasks such as blowing and licking. It would seem logical to think that if a child has verbal dyspraxia, they must have oral dyspraxia too, but research suggests otherwise. Although most professionals now distinguish between the two, occasionally the terms are interchangeable, which can be a little bit confusing. Some children with verbal dyspraxia will also have an element of motor dyspraxia. Early identification is crucial to success. These children need a high level of specialist speech and language therapy over a number of years, and in some cases, other professional input. They may also exhibit differences with reading, spelling, and handwriting, particularly if their speech difficulties persist beyond the age of 5 years. Routes to identification. This is a diagnosis made by a speech and language therapist, and a teacher can refer directly to the specialist, Otherwise, a GP should be consulted and referral to a speech and language therapist could be made. Dysgraphia. It's like my hand just won't do what my brain's telling it to, like it's lost connection. Amy, age 12. What is dysgraphia? The recognition and diagnosis of dysgraphia is a rather contentious issue. The use of the term is increasingly common, with some suggestion that dysgraphia belongs to the same family of developmental disorders as dyspraxia and dyslexia. What it means? Handwriting difficulties are more than simply untidy handwriting. They can affect the ability to write legibly, fluently, comfortably, and effortlessly. They can limit people's ability to reach their potential, as they may struggle to express their thoughts on paper or may avoid writing altogether. According to Angela Webb, chair of the National Handwriting Association, in terms of a diagnosis and use of a term to label a certain condition, we go by the Diagnosis and Statistical Manual, 5th edition, DSM. In order for a diagnosis to be given, there has to first be a standardized way of measuring the performance with set and agreed cutoff points. At present, there is no consensus here. Although the term dysgraphia appeared in DSM-4, it was described as a generalized difficulty with written expression and did not specify the three main types of possible handwriting deficiency: orthographic, motor, or perceptual. Not surprisingly, given the range of components which might cause a problem, the term dysgraphia does not appear in DSM-5, despite its frequent use in US literature. It's sometimes believed that all children with dyspraxia or DCD have dysgraphia, but this is not the case. Although a common feature of dyspraxia DCD is difficulty with handwriting, some diagnosed children can produce tidy and legible handwriting, usually at the expense of quality, and others may produce writing which is fast, though poorly controlled. Alternatively, poor handwriting can exist independent of dyspraxia DCD, particularly if the difficulties are not motor in origin, or if poor motor control results from a different etiology, such as impulsivity. Poor handwriting is also frequently reported in children who meet the criteria for other developmental disorders, such as ADHD, dyslexia, and mild spectrum autism. Handwriting is a complex skill requiring a blend of motor, perceptual, and orthographic skills. Challenges in handwriting can be caused by weaknesses in one or all of these areas, so meaningful interventions need to take into consideration the root of the challenge being experienced. For example, an appropriate motor program may address and strengthen some of the weakness being experienced, but not impact on the non-motor weaknesses. The absence of clarity in terms can cause confusions for families seeking a diagnosis, or indeed those who've been given a diagnosis without advice as to its impact. Currently, it seems reasonable to stick to the DSM-5 and say that until we have consensus and clear diagnostic tools to measure the type of severity of the condition, the term dysgraphia is meaningless. Therefore, it should not be used in the way that other developmental labels are used. The National Handwriting Association encourages the use of the term an impairment in written expression under the category of specific learning disorder, DSM-5, or a difficulty with orthographic integration, i.e. handwriting. Routes to identification. Because of the lack of consensus, the National Handwriting Association considers the diagnosis of dysgraphia to be unsound. However, it is recognized that many people experience handwriting difficulties. Identification of such difficulties has to be through an educational clinical psychologist, and the exact nature of the difficulty, motor, orthographic, or perceptual, should be stated. Despite it being a relatively common condition, it is sometimes hard to find a person who feels confident to assess this. Further information and links are available below.
Specific language impairment, SLI. Sometimes it's like having tape on my mouth, but the time I've worked out how to say something is no longer relevant. Josh, age 13. Well, what is it? Specific language impairment, SLI, is a term used to describe difficulties with learning and using language. There is a lot of debate about the terminology associated with SLI. You may hear the terms language disorder or language impairment. Children are described as having SLI when they struggle to understand and use language to communicate and learn. Children with SLI have no other condition. Their difficulties are specifically to do with learning to understand and use language. Children with SLI usually struggle at school despite the fact that in lots of ways they're as clever as their classmates. This is because so much learning depends on being able to understand and use language. Children with SLI don't just pick it up. They'll just need to be taught language skills in a specific way. They'll need to have support in the right order to reach their full potential. This support will be from a speech and language therapist along with other specialists, such as a language advisory teacher. Without the right support, SLA may cause lifelong difficulties. The support a child needs will depend on the type of difficulties they have, the severity of those difficulties, and the type of provision available. What does this mean? In many ways, children with this difficulty are as able as many other children, but the inability to put their thoughts into words, which is expressive language, and understand what's said to them, which is receptive language, is pronounced and their main area of difficulty. These skills are essential for reading, learning in school and other environments, and for surviving in the social world. Speech and language allows children to express what they feel and to control and regulate their emotions, so early intervention is essential. Without this, the consequences can be devastating for the child. Children can find extremely convincing strategies to make it appear that they're following what's being said or what's happening, and no two children are the same. They may display some or all of the following features. Talks in sentences but is difficult to understand. Can't follow long instructions. Listens but seems unable to understand. Has difficulty remembering the words they want to say. Finds it hard to join in, keep up with conversations or follow what's going on in the playground. They have difficulty expressing themselves even though they have ideas. Prevalence. Studies have shown that in 5-year-olds, SLI affects about 2 children in every classroom, so about 7%, and that's more common in boys than girls. Routes to identification. Recent discussion has centered on the importance of having a range of different types of information to aid identification: formal assessment, informal assessment, observation, and classroom behavior checklists. A speech and language therapist would carry out this range of assessment in order to profile difficulties. Checklists are available for school and early years staff, so they can use this to identify a need for further investigation. Early recognition is essential, and parents, early years practitioners, or teachers can refer directly to a speech and language therapist. Parental consent must always be obtained before a referral is made. There are further links below, should you need them.
A note on speech, language, and communication needs. SLCN. 10% of all children have long-term, persistent SCLN. This means 2 to 3 children in every classroom have a significant communication difficulty. This 10% is divided into children who have this difficulty as a result of another condition, such as autism or a hearing impairment. Children who have this condition as their primary condition. 7% of children and young people have SLCN as their main or primary condition. This is known as specific language impairment. A further group of children who have this condition associated with social deprivation. These children have poor or immature language and have the potential to catch up with their peers. Approximately 50% of children, particularly areas of social deprivation, are starting school with language skills below the expected level for their age. Quoted from Law 2011. Dyscalculia. I find it so hard. Numbers terrify me, so I spend most of the lesson just keeping my head down and hoping the teacher won't notice me. Jill, age 12. But what is it? The word dyscalculia is made up of dis, difficulty, and calculus, counting the stone. Thus, dyscalculia refers to a difficulty with arithmetic. It should be noted that there is currently far less research in this area than for other specific learning difficulties, Therefore, agreed definitions of dyscalculia are more difficult to find. The DSM-IV recommends a diagnosis of developmental dyscalculia when mathematical ability, as measured by individually administered standardized tests, is substantially below that expected given the person's chronological age, measured intelligence, and age-appropriate education. And what does this mean? In general, we'd expect to see problems with counting from a given point, confusion with number direction, such as 92 or 29, challenge remembering how numbers are written, challenge understanding mathematical symbols, challenge with the concept of space and or direction, takes a long time to complete mathematical tasks, problems with estimating, problems with planning of activities, poor memory for basic maths facts, high levels of debilitating anxiety relating to maths, problems with orientation, direction, mixing up similar looking numbers, a poor understanding of place value and its use in calculations, problems remembering shapes, problems counting backwards, poor concept of time and reading analog clocks and watches, inability to supervise. People usually think of challenges with maths in terms of learning in the classroom. However, if an individual has dyscalculia, the ramifications of this extend across many other significant areas involved in daily living. These can include money and budgeting, timekeeping, organization, and understanding weight and measurement. This can have a profound influence on job opportunity and retention. Prevalence. Dyscalculia is thought to affect between 3 and 6% of the population to varying degrees. And a journal is available from Price and Ansari on the link below. Routes to identification. Well, your simple lists of questions may give an indication of dyscalculia. You're going to have a screening using commercially available tools that can be administered by a non-specialist, although training is recommended. Specialist teacher assessment usually uses a variety of tools to produce a picture of strengths and weaknesses, a more detailed report where the focus is on support strategies. An educational psychologist assessment uses a variety of tests, often closed ones, looking at how an individual processes information to build up a picture of those strengths and weaknesses. There are links below, should you need them. Autism Spectrum Disorder, ASD. We're usually very visual learners with poor short-term memory, so we'll forget much of what you tell us almost immediately, unless we read it or write it down, or shown something in the format of a picture, graphics, video, or we can relate it quickly to some other long-term memory we have. Pixie, an autistic teenager. So what is autism spectrum disorder? It's a lifelong developmental disability affecting social and communication skills and the way in which people experience the world around them. It's not classified as a specific learning difficulty. What does it mean? Autism can be disabling and debilitating if it's not accepted and supported appropriately. It's a spectrum disorder, and that means that the individual may exhibit a wide range of issues. Furthermore, these issues can vary widely from one individual to another. Challenges may also vary from individual person on a daily basis, meaning they may be more or less sensitive to particular things on different days. So let's look at the challenges they face. The first one we look at is social communication. So people with autism spectrum disorders have challenges with verbal and non-verbal communication. For example, they may have difficulty interpreting the meaning of gestures, facial expressions, or intonation and tone of voice. People with autism often understand the meaning behind these areas of communication, but they struggle with how they vary according to context. So, example, a raised voice can indicate anger or excitement, and people with autism find it difficult to interpret which of these emotions is being conveyed. They can have a wide and extensive vocabulary, but they may use language that's overly formal or literally meaning. Another challenge they face is social interaction. Children and adults with autistic spectrum disorders have challenges with social relationships. They may, for example, appear aloof and indifferent to other people. Due to challenges in reading facial expressions and body language, people with autism may engage in long monologues or interrupt conversations in a way that can seem inappropriate. They have challenges with imagination. There's a weakness in the development of play and imagination. For example, autistic children do not develop creative let's pretend play in the way other children do. They have a limited range of imaginative activities, possibly copied and pursued rigidly and repetitively. Issues with social imagination mean that people with autism often find it challenging to visualize what's coming up next. This can lead to reliance on structure and routine, or raise levels of anxiety when plans change unexpectedly. They also have challenges with sensory needs. So people with autism can be over or under sensitive to all seven senses: touch, taste, sight, sound, smell, vestibular, and proprioception, or awareness of body position. Also, their ability to process these senses is not static and can change depending on the levels of stress. This can mean that people on the autism spectrum require occupational therapy adjustments. So what are the positive features? Well, honesty, live in the moment, rarely judge others, are passionate, have terrific memories, and not tied to social expectations. Prevalence, 1 in 100 people are thought to be affected. Asperger syndrome, AS. The most recent edition of the DSM and ICD diagnostic manuals do not include Asperger syndrome as a separate diagnosis. Individuals presenting with these characteristics will now be given the diagnosis of ASD. However, many students currently have a diagnosis of Asperger syndrome. People with this do not usually have the accompanying learning disabilities associated with autism, and their language skills are highly developed. However, they still have challenges understanding language and communication. Routes to identification? Well, a GP and referral to a paediatrician, and usually a multidisciplinary team of specialists. And there are links below should you need those. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, ADHD. It's like there's three of me all wanting to do different things at the same time. Adam, age 10. But what is it? ADHD is a lifelong condition characterized by inattentiveness, hyperactivity, and impulsivity. People with ADHD tend to find it difficult to maintain focus and are hyperactive, always on the go. They may exhibit unwanted or inappropriate behavior, seem inattentive, and act on impulse. In order to be identified as ADHD, the behavior should be present in at least two environments, example, home and school, and should have been present before the age of 12 years. ADHD can exist in isolation, but is commonly seen co-occurring with one or more specific learning difficulties. There are three presentations of ADHD. Inattentive presentation, sometimes referred to as ADD. Hyperactive impulsive presentation, or combined presentation, which is the most severe. In terms of gender and age, ADHD, most research is consistent there are more boys than girls with ADHD, hyperactive impulsive presentation, but there are more girls than boys with ADHD, inattentive presentation. This is an important issue. It's easy to spot hyperactive and impulsive symptoms, and there's a lot of evidence to support that girls with ADHD inattentive type are missed, especially during the primary years. This can have serious long-term consequences in terms of their learning, behavior, and self-esteem later in life. This is one of the major reasons why the age on onset was raised from 7 to 12 in the recent DSM-5 in terms of identification of symptoms. What does this mean? Children can display behavioral differences if the needs are not understood. This may lead to social exclusion. Let's look at inattentiveness. Having a short attention span and being easily distracted. Making careless mistakes. Appearing to be unable to listen or carry out instructions. Constantly changing activity or task. Issues with organization. Let's look at hyperactivity and impulsiveness. Being unable to sit still, especially in calm or quiet surroundings. Constantly fidgeting. Lack of concentration. Excessive physical movement. Constant chattering. Butting in, interrupting conversations, not able to take turns. Acting impulsively. Little or no sense of danger.
consistent risk-taking behavior. Positive features. Well, they're engaging, charismatic personalities, adventurous, creative, have lots of interests, they're resourceful, and they're willing to explore. Prevalence. It's estimated that between 1 and 4% of children will have the disorder. 1% will meet the diagnostic criteria for a severe form. Routes to identification. Diagnosis should be a medical one. A child should be seen by a GP in the first instance and then maybe referred to a pediatrician, clinical psychologist, or a psychiatrist. Further notes and links are available should you need them. Anxiety and mental health. When people experience sensory overload or anxiety, their behavior may seem a little different to others. They aren't having a tantrum or being uncooperative. They're just simply overwhelmed and trying to cope the best they can. Rosie. One further area which cannot be classified as a specific learning difficulty, but which warrants inclusion in the guide, is anxiety and mental health. In March 2016, the Department for Education UK published a booklet entitled Mental Health and Behaviour in Schools, Departmental Advice for School Staff. This lists low self-esteem, academic failure, neurodiversity, and communication difficulties as some of the high-risk factors in the development of mental health issues. One that is particularly relevant in the classroom is anxiety. So what is it? Anxiety is the term we use to describe feelings of unease, fear, or worry. It's a normal response to a frightening or unknown situation, such as attending a new job interview or preparing for exams. However, unless recognized and managed appropriately, feelings of anxiety can escalate into something completely debilitating. Anxiety is a common and recurring theme amongst people with specific learning difficulties. The Dyspraxia Foundation survey in 2014 found that 40% of young people with dyspraxia, DCD, aged 13 to 19, felt anxious all the time. Many anxiety disorders begin in childhood and adolescence and have been reported as one of the most common forms of psychological distress for people with learning differences. Further, it's likely that individuals do not seek help with significant levels of anxiety, meaning that many remain undiagnosed and without treatment. So what does this mean? In an article published by the British Psychological Society Journal in 2012, it was reported that social anxiety in learning situations, such as seminars, presentations, can inhibit student participation and impair the quality of student life. Anxiety may manifest in disruptive behaviour, inattention, throwing tantrums, physical symptoms such as stomach aches, palpitations, and not engaging with the learning process. Children with learning differences are likely to become anxious when they realize that their classmates are finding things easier than they are, which can become a block to learning. Teachers should pay attention to the emotional climate of their classroom, should not be threatening or anxiety-provoking. An awareness and understanding of the issues faced by children and young people with neurodivergence will help greatly in achieving this balance. So let's see what we need to be looking for. Tiredness, lack of concentration, irritability, sadness, withdrawal, loss of confidence, self-confidence, change in behavior, seems worried or easily upset, complains of feeling sick, complains of feeling shaky, dizzy, or thinks unpleasant thoughts. What's the prevalence? Around 1 in 6 people will experience mental health problems like anxiety each year. It's a figure that has steadily increased over the last 20 years. This means that up to 5 people in a classroom may be living with anxiety, whether they be OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder, social anxiety and shyness, exam stress, worry, or panic attacks. 13.3% of 16 to 19-year-olds and 15.8% of 20 to 24-year-olds have suffered from anxiety or had some neurotic episode. 1.7% of 16 to 19-year-olds and 2.2% of 20 to 24-year-olds have suffered from a depressive episode. 0.9% of 16 to 19-year-olds and 1.9% of 20 to 24-year-olds
have suffered from obsessive-compulsive disorder. And there's a link there at anxietyuk.org. Routes to identification. The Children and Adolescent Mental Health Service work a four-tier strategic framework with teachers. This means that teachers may be the first person to be alerted to a mental health issue, meaning they should act upon their concerns. Specific services will vary depending on the needs of the local area. It suggests that schools have a clear process for identifying children in need of further support. They should document evidence of the symptoms or behaviour that are causing the concern and include this with a referral. They should encourage the pupil and their parents, carers to speak to the GP where appropriate. Schools should work with a local mental health service to make the referral process as quick and efficient as possible, for example, by being clear who can refer, by ensuring schools have access to the relevant forms, and by sharing information about when decisions will be taken and fed back. They should understand the criteria that will be used by the services in determining whether a particular pupil needs their services. They should have a close working relationship with local services, including knowing who to call to discuss a possible referral and allowing pupils to access professional counselling at schools. They should consult about the most effective methods the school can undertake to support these children who aren't severe. There is a list of useful organisations below should you need them.